Today we are lucky to have Yi-Chen Fan from MIT, and well, he has his career trajectory in this slide: Berkeley, Caltech, Microsoft, and right now MIT. So he will tell us about entanglement dynamics at long times. So please.
First, I would like to thank Fanny and Debbie for giving me the opportunity to present my work. And in this talk, I will be talking about entanglement dynamics from random product states at long times. So the setting is that we have a quantum many-body system. For some results, there is a lattice, and for some other results, there isn't a lattice, but it is a system of many qubits or many qubits. And the initialization is a random product state. The question is that what is the behavior of entanglement at long times? And in particular, we will try to prove general upper bounds and lower bounds on this problem. And these are the references. The first reference is about the upper bound, and the second reference is about lower bound. So this is a very brief slide about entanglement in quantum many-body systems. That is why we study entanglement. I think this should be well known in the sense that in condensed matter, statistical and high energy physics, entanglement has been a very useful property that allows us to understand the different kinds of quantum many-body systems, including critical phenomena, topological order, and dynamical behavior, and also whether systems can be efficiently simulated on a classical computer. And for the abstract, it consists of two parts. The first part is about upper bound, and the second part is the lower bound. Roughly speaking, we will consider general systems. So that includes both chaotic systems and systems that shows localization. So you might expect that chaotic systems, the entanglement at long times is largest, while for localized systems, the entanglement is smallest. So that the upper bounds and the lower bounds are respectively, in some sense, applied to those two types of systems. For the upper bounds, we consider different settings or different models. And the result is roughly given as follows. The first setting is that we have a geometric local Hamiltonian. Geometric local means that we have a lattice, and the interaction in the Hamiltonian is a short range on the lattice. And if we start from a random product, the entanglement entropy is bounded away from the maximum entropy at all times with high probability. Here, bounded away means that the difference from the maximum entropy is lower bounded by a constant. And with high probability, the probability is with respect to random product state. That is a randomness in the initial state. The Hamiltonian is an arbitrary Hamiltonian, provided that it is geometric local. And we could also consider different types of Hamiltonian. In the second setting, we don't have a lattice. We have a spin glass model with random all-to-all interactions, in the sense that the interactions in the Hamiltonian is a full body. It only acts non-trivially on a constant number of terms, but it is a random. Each term is random, and start with an arbitrary product state. The state in the second setting, the state is not random. It could be any state. And the result is that the average entanglement entropy is bounded away from the maximum entropy at all times. Here, average is with respect to randomness in the Hamiltonian. So in the second setting, the state can be any state, but you have an ensemble of Hamiltonians, and the average over the ensemble, what you get is that it is bounded away from the maximum entropy at all times. And these results can be extended to any unitary evolution with charge conservation or to the SYK model. So the first case, any unitary evolution with charge conservation is similar to the setting one here. The setting one, we have a local Hamiltonian, so the energy is conserved. But if we don't have energy conservation, we have a different conservation law, then similar results can be proved. And the SYK model is kind of similar to the second setting. with random O2O injections, but in fermionic systems. So the on a conceptual perspective, these results highlight the difference between the entanglement generated by a chaotic Hamiltonian dynamics and that of random states. We know that if we have a complete random state in the Hilbert space, then the entanglement is almost maximal. Almost maximal means that if you cut a many body system into two parts, let's say one third versus two thirds in the number of qubits, then the entanglement entropy is exponentially close to the maximum entropy. But in the quantum dynamics setting, we show that the difference from the maximum entropy is lower bounded by constant. This shows the difference. And for the second part of the talk, we will discuss lower bounds. And we usually say that entropy is extensive. And in order to make that statement more precise, we try to understand in what sense that statement can be made more precise. For instance, under what conditions and whether the statement holds generically, and if it is generic, then in what sense it is generic. The result is as follows. We have a quantum many-body system, and we say that Hamiltonian is an extensive entropy generator. If starting from a random product state, the entanglement entropy at long times obeys a volume law with overwhelming probability. So we are going to prove that the first result is that when Hamiltonian is an extensive entropy generator, we show that if its spectrum has non-degenerate gaps, we will define this notion more precisely later. But this is a condition only depends on the spectrum. And if the condition is satisfied, then we can show that the Hamiltonian is an extensive entropy generator. And the second result we would like to investigate how generic this condition on the spectrum is. And we show that in the space of geometric local Hamiltonians, then the non-degenerate gap condition is satisfied almost everywhere, in a sense that if you, for instance, if you randomly pick up a geometric local Hamiltonian, then the probability that the condition is satisfied is one. And as an application, we will apply this result to many body localized systems, and this implies the so-called unbounded growth of entanglement. And this behavior distinguishes the behavior in Anderson localized systems. Okay, we have done with the abstract, and let me move on to the more technical part. Not really technical, just a more detailed introduction of the results. But before I go to the results, let me have some basic definitions. The first is asymptotic notations, Big O notation, Big O meta notation, Big Theta notation. So the Big O notation says that it is asymptotically upper bounded by F is the O of G, means that asymptotically upper bounded by G, and omega is asymptotically lower bounded, and theta means both O and both omega, in the sense that F and G has the same scaling. In particular, I would like to mention that when we say exponentially small n, then it is usually denoted by E2 minus omega n. This is because when we say that something exponentially small, usually what we mean is that it is upper bounded by an exponentially small quantity. So that omega is a lower bound with a minus sign, it is an upper bound. And the definition of entanglement entropy is that it is a von Neumann entropy of the reduced density matrix for a biapartite pure state, rho AB. Okay, so let's consider the first part about upper bound deviation from the maximum entropy. And in this talk, the setting will be that we have an initial state, which is a hard random product state. The hard random product state means that first we have a system of capital N spins or qubits or qudits. Here, in this talk, capital N always refers to the system size. And the initial state is given as follows. It is a product state. And for each individual spin, it is chosen independently and uniformly at random with respect to the Haar measure. That is, if we have qubits, it says that each qubit is uniformly distributed on the block sphere. And we know that if we initialize a system in a Haar random product, then it is typically a massive superposition of the energy eigenstates. It's regardless of what Hamiltonian you have, you can expand it. You can get its eigenstates, and it's a massive superposition in the sense that massive doesn't mean anything related to mass. It just means that the superposition is very large. That is many terms in that is many eigenstates whose coefficients are non-negligible. And intuitively, we will consider a chaotic local Hamiltonian, and the time evolution for such systems is so complicated that one might expect that the state at long times behaves like a random state. So this leads to the following conjecture. It says that if we have a chaotic local Hamiltonian, not necessarily geometrically local, but as long as the Hamiltonian is chaotic in some sense, then starting from a random product state, then the entanglement entropy approaches that of random state at long times. That the entanglement entropy at long times approaches that of a random state. So this is a conjecture, and we will investigate to what extent this conjecture is valid or not. But before I present the results, let me briefly review the entanglement of random states. So for the entanglement of random states, it can be worked out exactly. And if we have a bipartite pure state chosen uniformly at random with respect to the Haar measure, then this is from the Neumann entropy of the reduced density matrix. And taking the average, if we average, we have this particular expression. And this expression is asymptotically given by this. So here, dA, d sub a, d sub b are the local dimensions of the two subsystems. And assume without loss of generality that d sub a is smaller than or equal to d sub b. Then we see that log d a is just the maximum entropy and minus some corrections. And if, let's say, we have a system of many qubits and a is a constant fraction of the system size and the constant is less than 1/2, then dA over dB, the Hilbert space dimension ratio, is exponentially small in system size. So in this case, we see that the average entanglement entropy is almost the maximal entropy. And if dA is equal to dB, that is equal biopartition, then the difference is 1/2. And this expression is for the average. And one might ask how concentrated the distribution is. To this end, one can just compute the variance. So the variance there is also an exact formula, which is much more complicated. And it tells us that the concentration is very well, that is, it's highly concentrated. In the sense that if you randomly sample a state, then the deviation from the mean is going to be very small with a very high probability. And now we are ready to present the first results in the upper bounds in the first setting about geometric local Hamiltonian. So suppose that we have a chain of capital N qubits and we have a local Hamiltonian, which is of this form, and each term acts on qubits that are nearest neighbor to each other. So here, for simplicity, I just present the results using a spin chain and for qubit systems, but similar results can be proved in a very similar way for qubits in higher spatial dimensions. So here, spatial dimension isn't really a restriction. And we do not assume transition invariance. And after we have a system, we need to clarify how to divide system into subsystems. And in order to be fair, we just consider all subsystems of the the same size. That is, in this talk, little n is always the subsystem size. And we always assume that the little n is smaller than equal to capital N over 2. That is, we are considering a smaller subsystem. And this notation denotes averaging over all contiguous subsystems of size little n. And there are capital N subsystems because we use periodic boundary condition. So the result is given by the following theorem. It says that if we initialize a system in a hard random product state and let it evolve under the Hamiltonian. So this is just the time evolution with respect to the Hamiltonian and partial trace over the complement of A, we get the reduced density matrix of subsystem A at time t. Then if the subsystem size is larger than 1, we have the following statement. It says that the probability of some event is going to be very close to 1. Here, delta is an arbitrarily small constant, which means that the probability of this event is almost 1. And this event says that the average entanglement entropy after averaging over subsystems and takes a t such that this entanglement entropy largest is given by this is maximal entropy because little n is subsystem size minus omega little n over capital N. This result says that if, let's say, little n, the subsystem size, is a constant fraction of size of the system size, then the deviation from the maximum entanglement is at least a constant, which is different from the random state case. If, let's say, little n over capital N is 1/3, then the random state case is that it is exponentially small in capital N. But here, the difference from the maximum entanglement is at least order 1. And this is the main result in the first setting. And in this setting, we have a Hamiltonian so that time evolution conserves energy, which is a conserved quantity. And this conservation, in some sense, constrains the entanglement from being the maximum. And if we don't have energy conservation, but we have some other conservation, then whether the results is still true or not, it depends on what conservation law it is. And if it is a charge conservation defined as the following, then the similar results still holds. In this case, we have a system of n qubits without an underlying lattice structure. And we need to define how we partition the system. And we just partition the system in the following way. That is, we have little m. We have m different subsystems, not necessarily different. It could be the same, but we have just a little m subsystems, and it could be possibly overlapping. And we assume that each subsystem is of the same size, and little n, recall that little n is always the subsystem size. And another requirement is that each qubit in the system in the is in the same number of subsystems. That is, we just, for each qubit in the system, we count how many subsystems it appears, and the counting results for each qubit should be the same. So in this sense, it's kind of fair because each qubit is treated equally. And with this type of dividing the system into subsystems, then we define what we mean by charge conservation. So we have qubits, and we just using the sigma z measurement as the charge. That is, this is a Pauli matrix z, and we take the sum. This is the total charge operator, and the ut is a unitary time evolution operator. It commutes with the total charge operator, but there's no other requirement. In a sense that ut can be generated by, it doesn't need to be generated by a time independent Hamiltonian. It could be arbitrary. For instance, ut could be a quantum circuit with charge conservation, or it could be the time evolution operator of the SY model. SY model is a random bound Heisenberg model. And in this setting, we can prove very similar results. That is, if we initialize the system in a hard random product state and let it evolve, and for each subsystem, we can define a reduced density matrix at time t. And then we have a very similar result. That is, this is an internal entropy for one particular subsystem, and we average over all subsystems, take t such that it is the largest, and it deviates from the maximum entanglement by at least a constant, if little n over capital N is a constant. And the event of this property is arbitrarily close to one. Okay, so let's now consider a different setting about random Hamiltonians, or an ensemble of Hamiltonians. And let's first consider a spin, the spin system, or a qubit system. So consider a system of capital N qubits, and these are the Pauli matrices. And we define the Hamiltonian as follows. It is a Hamiltonian with random O2O interaction. Here, sigma are the Pauli matrix, and it just involves all type of combining to sigma. You see that sigma here, J and K are the indices of the size, and L and M are the XYZ symbol. And we have all type of interactions and with some coefficients. And we could collect the coefficient into a more compact notation called the capital J. And every coefficient is a standard normal random variable, so that we have a collection of this total number of independent standard normal random variables. This is the Hamiltonian. And we also need to specify how we partition the system into subsystems. And in this particular setting, we just consider the average over all subsystems of fixed size with size little n. And they are altogether capital N choose little n, such number of subsystems. And the result is the following. In this case, we do not need a random product state. And we could initialize the system in an arbitrary product state. And then we just evolve this state with respect to the Hamiltonian we have. Here, J is refers to a particular sample of the Hamiltonian, that is a particular realization of the disorder, or a sample of the randomness in the Hamiltonian. And then we have a reduced density matrix with respect to a particular sample. And then we first average over subsystem size and choose time such that the internal entropy is the largest, and average over disorder in the Hamiltonian, or randomness in the definition of the Hamiltonian. What we get is that it's given by the maximum entropy minus omega of little n squared over capital N squared. So that's if little n, the subsystem size, a constant fraction of the system size, then the correction to the maximum entanglement, maximum entropy is at least order one, which shows that it's different from a random state. And this result can be extended to the SYK model, which is a model with Majorana fermions, O2O interaction. So the model is very similar. The difference here is that now we have Majorana fermions, and it is a four-body interaction. Previously, in the spin class model, it is a two-body interaction. And we still have a random coefficient there. We can connect it into a more compact notation called capital K. And we still average over all subsystems of little n, but here little n needs to be even in order to make sense. But there is one technical complication here, that is, in fermionic systems, defining a hard random product state is a tricky issue, because the Hamiltonian we have now conserves fermion parity. And in because of this conservation, the Hilbert space is split into an even sector and an odd sector with respect to fermion parity. And these two sectors do not interact with each other. So that it is controversial whether we should allow superposition of states from both sectors. So on the one hand, such a superposition is compatible with axioms of quantum mechanics. But on the other hand, it is believed to be unphysical. So it is not clear how to define hard random product states with definite fermion parity. In order to avoid this technical difficulty, we try to revise the statement. Previously, we considered random hard random product state, but now we introduce a particular condition, and we will show that any state satisfies this condition would lead to a similar result, and we will justify why this condition is reasonable. So let me. Okay. So let me state the result. The result says that we initialize system in a state called Psi, and we assume that a constant fraction of the following expectation values are non-vanishing, in the sense that here this is the full body interaction term in the Hamiltonian, and we take the expectation value, we require that it is theta 1, means that it is lower bounded and upper bounded by a constant. It's trivially upper bounded by a constant, but we require that it is lower bounded by a constant, and we count the number of tubes, JK, LF, such that it is lower bounded by some constant. And we assume that the total counting result is at least a constant fraction of the all possible tubes, that is for order n to the fourth power. So why this is reasonable? But let me recall that in string systems, we consider random product state. A particular property of a random product state is that if you look at the reduced density matrix, let's say reduced density matrix of one spin or two spins, then the reduced density matrix deviates from the maximic state because we have a locally random product state. So that if it deviates from the maximic state, we take the average with respect to a traceless operator. Then we expect that for generic traceless operator, the expectation value deviates from zero. So this is very similar here. You see that this is a traceless operator and we take the expectation value. We require that it is lower bounded by a constant after taking the absolute value. This is, in this sense, similar to random product state. That is, we require that locally, the initial state, the local reduced density matrix kind of deviates from the max mix state in this sense. So with this condition, and we can do similarly to what we did before. That is, we let us, with this initial state, we let it evolve with respect to Hamiltonian. And then we compute the entanglement entropy of a subsystem, average over subsystems, take the T such that the entanglement is largest, average over the randomness in the Hamiltonian. What we get is this result. Now we have a little n log 2 over 2. We have over 2 because we are dealing with Majorana fermions. So two Majorana fermions, roughly speaking, corresponds to Hilbert space dimension 2. And now the correction term, because little n to the fourth power over capital N to the fourth power. And if subsystem size is a constant fraction of system size, then the correction is order 1. We are done with the first part. So now let's consider the second part. It is the second part addresses the lower bound. Let me first give some a higher level motivation. That is, in textbooks, we learned that entropy is an extensive quantity, and this statement appears very frequently in a statistical mechanics course. And in some sense, it says that if we initialize a system in a low entropy state, generically, although not always, the entropy will grow with time and eventually become proportional to the system size. This is the statement. But here, the statement isn't very precise. For instance, we know that it is not always the case. Then how to understand generically? And in what sense this statement can be established more rigorously? This is what we will do in the second part of the talk for quantum systems. And for quantum systems, we consider isolated systems. And in such system, if we just consider the entropy of the entire system, then the entropy doesn't change. This is because time evolution is unitary. So in order to observe non-trivial entropy dynamics in the unitary evolution, we need to divide the system into two parts, A and B. And we assume that A is smaller than or equal to B. But here, then we can view B as the best of A and consider the entropy of A. So this is more similar to setting appeared in steady state mechanics, that is, so we have a bar set of system. But let me mention that in this particular setting, we do not require that A is substantially smaller than B, in the sense that it could be that A is 1/3 of the total system size and B is 2/3, or even if they are equal. And in this setting, we will consider extensive subsystem entropy, that is, the entropy of A, and it is just known as the volume law of entanglement if the total system is a pure state. And in this statement, we initialize system in a low entropy state. We need to have a generic low entropy state. And the most general unentangled state with zero subsystem entropy for any subsystem is just a random product state. So this is comes back to our setting. Okay, before let me present results, let me before I present results, let me give some overview of the understanding. Previously, I mentioned that it is not always, and it is very easy to construct a trivial example. For instance, you could have a system where the Hamiltonian is always unsized, that is no coupling. In this case, if you initialize in a product state, then it is always a product state. But this system is not very generic in the sense that if we perturb the system a little bit, adding some nearest neighbor interactions as a perturbation, then the dynamics will entangle the entire system. So there is a less trivial example. Even if we have nearest neighbor interaction, it could be that the entanglement is still bounded. It is not volume law at long times. And this is an example is called Anderson localized system. So if you look at this Hamiltonian is on a speed chain. And sigma are the sigma x, sigma y, and sigma z are the Pauli matrices. And if we don't have the last term, that is g sub z is zero, we have the first term, sigma x, sigma y term, this is nearest neighbor coupling. And this with uniform coefficient, that is the coefficient is fixed. And the second term is about the field, but now the field is a random field. It is side dependent. And in this model, if GZ is zero, then this model is a model of Anderson localization in the sense that one could map this model in using Jordan-Wigner transformation to a fermionic system. And in the fermionic system, it is a free fermion system. And for this particular model, Anderson localization, we can see some numerical results. That is G sub Z over G perpendicular. The blue line is the GZ is zero. You see that after some transition periods, the entanglement entropy becomes very small and it doesn't grow with time. So that it seems to be saturated. But as long as we turn on GZ, that is after, if GZ is not equal to zero, then this term, after mapping to fermion language, introduces interaction between fermions. So it is indirecting fermion model. So for arbitrarily small GZ, we see that the entanglement entropy starts to grow with time. And we could see what is the behavior of entanglement at long times. So if you simulate it to a longer time, you see that this is finite size scaling behavior. If GZ is zero, then it's still the finite size scaling, L is a total system size, doesn't depend on L. But as long as GZ is slightly larger than zero, we see that it is we have a volume law, and the coefficient of volume doesn't seem to be depend sensitively on the value of GZ. So it says that even if Anderson localization, the entangled entropy is bounded at long times, as long as we add some generic perturbation, we will have a volume law behavior. So this, we will try to understand why this is true. Okay, for our results, we need to define some notions. The first notion is about the spectrum. And we say that once we have a Hamiltonian, we can compute the eigenvalues. And we say that spectrum is non-degenerate if all eigenvalues are distinct. Here, non-degeneracy means refers to the entire spectrum, not just the low energy part, because we are considering time evolution. So every n state participates. And we need to define a slightly more technical notion that is called non-degenerate gaps, which says that the difference between energy eigenvalues are distinct in the sense that first we have an energy spectrum and we compute the difference between any pair of eigenvalues. And we require that they are distinct in the sense that if the difference between the two differences are equal, it implies that G is equal to G prime and K is equal to K prime. That is the indices of the spec of the eigenvalues are the same. And this in particular implies that the non-degenerate gap condition implies that the spectrum is non-degenerate. This is because if you choose K is equal to K prime, then it implies that if J is equal to EJ is equal to EJ prime, then J is equal to G prime. So intuitively, this type of condition should be expected to hold in generic quantum many body systems. And we will make this statement more rigorous later. Here, another remark is that when we say equal, it means that equal in an exact sense. So we are considering finite sizes. As long as it is slightly different, then it is considered different. There's no finite size limits in any sense in this particular definition. So as long as these two treated as real numbers are not exactly equal, then it is considered unequal. And we need to define the setting of first the system. The system is n spins or qubits with local dimension d. D is a local dimension. And we need to define how we partition the system. But this is what you have seen before. That is, we do it in, we have a little m number of subsystems, and little n is a subsystem size. And we require that each subsystem has the same number, that is a little n number of spins or qubits. And each spin is in the same number of subsystems. And we initialize the system in a hard random product state, capital psi, and let it evolve with respect to the Hamiltonian. We try to show that at long times we have a volume law of entanglement. But we need to mention that because we are considering a finite size system, there is a so-called quantum recurrence theorem. It says that in any finite size system, there is always a sufficient large time so that the state evolved to that time is arbitrarily close to the initial state. Since the initial state is a product state, it tells us that we cannot prove a volume law at any large t is the time. We could only expect to prove that we have volume law for most t. So this is our result about the volume law. It says that first we need a constraint. This is for some technical reason, but this constraint can be removed later. I will say that. So at this stage, let's introduce this constraint. It says that little n is a subsystem size is a capital N times this quantity. So here d is a local dimension. So d plus 1 over 2 is always less than or equal to d. So that means that little n can be linear in capital N, but the coefficient cannot reach 1/2. And the epsilon is arbitrarily small constant. And our assumption is that the Hamiltonian edge has non-degenerate gaps. Then with this assumption, our result is that the following statement. So this might look a little bit complicated, but let me try to rephrase it orally. That is, we first have a statement. The statement is that the entangled entropy of subsystem AJ at time t, and this entangled entropy average over subsystems. And the statement says that it's a lower bounded by this particular quantity. So epsilon is an arbitrary small constant. Little n is subsystem size, and this is constant. It is a summation. It is a harmonic series from 2 to d. And this is a lower bound. And we need to say that what is the probability of the lower bound? First, we recall that because of recurrence theorem, we cannot prove this lower bound for any time t. So the probability that here t, the probability t belongs to a real number means that we choose a sufficiently large real number and we sample t from 0 to, let's say tau is a sufficiently large real number and we sample t from 0 to tau. So in this sense, we would like to see the probability, and the probability is almost 1 up to an exponentially small system size quantity. And then we ask what is the probability of the event with respect to the randomness in the initial state. Recall that our initial state is a random product state. And similarly, the probability is almost 1 up to an exponentially small correction. And in particular, in this result, there is no underlying lattice. And if we have a quantum lattice, and in this case, we can extend the results, we can remove this constraint in the sense that we introduce the following notation of averaging over all contiguous subsystems of size little n. They are capital N such subsystems because we use periodic boundary condition. And then we average over all subsystems. What we get is that we have volume law with high probability. The higher probability is with respect to both time and the initial state, and the violation probability is always exponentially small. So this is our result. And the assumption is that we have non-degenerate gap. And we need to understand how generic this condition is. And to this end, we prove the following theorem. That is, let me first introduce the results in one dimension. In one dimension, that is, we have a generic Hamiltonian, generic in the sense that this is, so sigma is a Pauli matrix. This is a one body term, that is unsigned term, and this is a nearest neighbor term, and the combination. That is the interaction between nearest neighbor is arbitrary. And we have some coefficients called alpha. So sorry that the notation are very similar. This is sigma, this is alpha. Alpha are coefficients, sigma are Pauli matrices. And we collect alpha, all the coefficients into some compact notation. So this compact notation corresponds to the point in a space. And we can show that the set of all alpha such that the spectra has degenerate gaps is of measure 0, which means that if you randomly choose alpha, then what you get is that the condition is satisfied. And similar results can be proved in a similar way for other types of systems. First of all, here we only consider a qubit system, but it also applies to QDIS systems, and it could apply and it could be in higher spatial dimensions, and even with non-local interactions. In this sense, the non-degenerate gap condition is generic in the sense that it's satisfied almost everywhere in the space of local Hamiltonians. And in particular, we could apply the results to many-body localizations. For instance, one model for many-body localization is called the INBRI model, because it is first introduced by INBRI. And this model has ZZ interaction and on-site fields, and alpha are the coefficients. And we can show that for this particular model, the non-degenerate gap condition. So the probability, so for all alpha, such that it has degenerate gaps of Bessel theorem, in the sense that this random model is with probability one, it has non-degenerate gaps. And similarly, we can show the non-degenerate gap condition for the XXZ model. That is, we have uniform nearest neighbor XY coupling and ZZ coupling. And ZZ coupling and the on-site field. So this model is very, very similar to the model in the numerics before. You have a uniform XY coupling and ZZ coupling and the on-site field. So after we show that these models have non-degenerate gaps, then our results in previous slides apply means that if you initialize the system in a random product state, then you will have a volume law at long times. And in this sense, it explains the numerical observation of the volume law. And furthermore, we would like to ask, about this, how tight this bound is. That is, we have volume law and coefficient, and you see that this coefficient is less than log d, so that it is not the maximally possible coefficient. So then whether this is tight or not, we can answer that question in the sense that it is possible to construct a particular model such that you see that I will not specify this construction in detail, but eventually what you get is that you have an entanglement entropy, and after averaging over time, t. So this is the integral from theorem to tau and divided by tau. This is average over t. And then average over psi, the initial state. What you get is that it is less than or equal to, this is subsystem size, and with this coefficient. You see that this coefficient is exactly the same as the coefficient here. Means that this bound is tight. Okay, so let's summarize what we have discussed so far. That is, so we studied the entanglement dynamics of quantum many-body systems at long times, and we proved the following. The first part about upper bound, and it applies to, more related to chaotic systems. And it says that it holds in different settings. The first setting is that we have geometric local Hamiltonian on a lattice. And starting from a random product state, the entanglement entropy is bounded away from the maxi entropy at all times with high probability. The probability is with respect to the random product state, the randomness in the initial state. And the Hamiltonian is a non-random and can be any geometric local Hamiltonian. And this, the second setting is that we have a random Hamiltonian with O2O interaction, but arbitrary product state. And we can prove that average entanglement entropy is bounded away from the maximum entropy at all times. Bounded away means that the difference is at least a constant. And this result can be extended to other systems, for instance, unitary evolution with charge conservation to the SYK model. And this shows that the entanglement generated from a random product state by a chaotic time evolution is different, is smaller than the entanglement of a random state. And for the second part, we would like to understand the notion of extensive entropy. And then we show that if we initialize the system in a random product state, then the entanglement entropy obeys a volume law at long times with overwhelming probability, provided that the spectrum has non-degenerate gaps. That is, we don't need to look at the eigenstates, but only the eigenvalues. As long as it is has non-degenerate gaps, then we know that we have volume law at long times. Furthermore, we show that the non-degenerate gap condition is satisfied almost everywhere in the space of geometric low Hamiltonians. And as an application, this results imply the so-called unbounded growth of entanglement in many body localized systems. Unbounded means that it is not bounded, and that in a thermodynamic limit in the system size goes to infinity, then because we have volume law, so that it's unbounded. And this, to my knowledge, is the only known rigorous result for many body localized systems. Okay, so is there any question?
Well, I guess I have a question. Thanks for the nice talk, Yuchen. So regarding the non-degenerate gaps.
Okay.
You know, like it seems like if you have 2 to the n eigenvalues for an n qubit system, is it a problem if you just have 1 degenerate gap? I mean, like, is it sort of, you know, that you need this not to happen very frequently, or do you really need that there's no degeneracy at all?
For our results, we don't need, indeed, we don't need that there is exactly no degeneracy. That is, we can define, that is, because for each J and K, we can compute the difference so that we have a notion of a gap. And degeneracy of the gap is given by the number of tubes GK such that the difference is a particular number. And as long as the degeneracy is not exponential, then the result is still valid.
Got it. Thanks.
So, for instance, if you look at this model, so this model, if you don't have the last term, then the previous three terms is a model of free fermion. So, free fermion, because the eigenvalues are just the sum of independent modes, you see that the degeneracy is exponential, so that our result doesn't apply, and indeed it is a error law. But after adding some perturbation, it's kind of for using our results because it is a measure one phenomenon. After some sufficiently arbitrary perturbation, you should have a non-degenerate gap so that you have a volume law.
Can I ask a follow-up question? I mean, so what about commuting Hamiltonians? Would those be more like the flat blue line?
I'm sorry?
Would, if you considered commuting Hamiltonians, what would happen there?
Commuting Hamiltonian? I'm not sure. I'm not particularly sure about the spectrum property of commuting Hamiltonian. For instance, how large the degeneracy can be,
certainly you can have commuting Hamiltonians where the only eigenvalues are like zero through n for n.
You can have such commuting, but I don't know if you consider generic commuting.
Right.
Yeah. And also in our particular case, as I mentioned, even if the degeneracy is not exactly zero, if it is, let's say, a power law in system size, it's fine.
Thanks.
So, Song Ki Lee.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, thank you for the nice talk. So, I actually have three questions. So, the first question is, in the first part, if you allow Hamiltonian to be time dependent, how does your result modify it?
So if the Hamiltonian is time dependent and there is no other conserved quantity, then our result doesn't apply. For instance, we know that if we have a random circuit, that is each gate is a high random circuit, then at long times it does has the same entanglement as the random state.
Oh, okay. You mean max? You can reach the maximum entropy.
Not so for the random state. If you have biopartition, it is if you have equal biopartition, then it is not exactly maximum. But I think I understand what your point.
But so your result is that there's an order of one difference from the maximum, right?
Yeah.
And then you're saying if the Hamiltonian become time dependent, it become smaller than order of one?
But still that is, okay. So that is, if for, you can see from this, the entanglement of random states, if dA over dB, that is if, let's say A is 1/3 of the system, the total system, that's B is 2/3, because this is a Hilbert space dimension, then this is exponentially small, which means that it is approaches the maximum entanglement, maximum entropy very quickly. And then our result says that it is order one difference. Yeah.
Right.
So if we have a time-dependent Hamiltonian and it can depend on time in some arbitrary way, then we are usually expect that we have this behavior at long times.
Sorry, this behavior meaning that still order of one correction?
No. It is the entanglement of random state behavior, random state entanglement. That is, as I mentioned, for instance, if you consider a hard random quantum circuit, then what you get at long times is this result.
Okay, so sorry. So just to be concrete, when A and B are bipartite, your result says there's a 1/2 difference.
If A and B are the same size, then our results cannot tell. You see that here, the difference is order one, but for random states, if A and B are the same size, it is also order one. So that's our results cannot tell the difference between random states versus evolution from random product state by Hamiltonian. But our results can be used to prove a difference if A, subsystem A is a constant fraction of system size with a constant less than 1/2. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hope it is clear.
Sorry. And then when there's a time dependence, how does the correction change?
If there is a time dependence, then our result doesn't apply. And the expectation is that what you get is the entanglement of random states.
Okay. And the second question is, in the second part, can you tell, you know, how fast entanglement grows? I guess, for example, could you have predicted that it grows logarithmically instead of linearly in time?
Yeah, for our results, we cannot say how fast it goes. We only know that after sufficiently long time, we have a volume.
I see.
And how fast it grows depends on your system. That is, in this particular system, you see that it is semi-log plot, so that it is logarithmic growth. And if you have a chaotic system, then in a chaotic system in a spin time, then you expect that linear growth. So that the growth rate, the speed of growth depends on your system. And for our result, you see that our result is dependent of what system we have. So that if you would like to understand the how fast it grows, I believe that this is a very important question. And if you would like to investigate this question, then you need to explicitly take into consideration the property of your system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you put some lower bound on how fast it can grow? I mean, in other words, is it possible to have a slower growth than log or?
For our results, we assume we have a non-degenerate gap. But generally, you might expect that the difference between gaps, because the gap is kind of exponentially small in the system size. And if one goes through our proof and using assuming that the gap is the difference between gaps is exponentially small, then what we get is that we will see the volume law behavior after exponential time.
Oh.
Yeah, so that is one expects that generically it is at most after exponential time, we will see the volume law behavior.
Ah, I see. Okay, thank you.
Is there any other question?
I have a question.
Okay.
Okay, so I think for the first part, your like the deviation between the entropy and the maximum entropy will be order one. Mm-hmm. But for the second part, it looks like it's like order n.
Mm-hmm.
So what will be the actual value?
Okay, so this is a very good question, because our results kind of doesn't explicitly use the property of the system under consideration. And in this sense, it applies to all systems, and you see that our upper bound and lower bound has have a large gap. This is because different systems, the internal behavior can be different. So that, for instance, we have already shown that the lower bound is tight, in the sense that this volume law coefficient cannot be improved. So that's your question about what is the actual value, it depends on the system. And there are some systems which is very close to our, saturates our lower bound. And there could be some other systems which saturates our upper bound. So there's no specific solution. It is system dependent.
So what if like I just probably some general, like say a generic system, a generic chaotic system, then what do you expect?
Can you say? Can you repeat your question again? What about generic?
I mean, for generic system in some sense, like generic chaotic system in some sense, what's your expectation?
So my expectation is that if you have a generic chaotic system, it would saturate our alpha bound.
Okay, so O1.
Yeah. So okay. My expectation is that the generic chaotic system would saturate our upper bound, and the generic localized systems should very close to our lower bound. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So I'm curious, like generically, how do you prove these results? Like what are the main technical ingredients? Like it's like what are the main tools or how would you
arrive at these results? So for the technical part about how to proving this result, for the upper bound, it mostly uses the conserved quantity. That is because it's conserves energy so that you consider, roughly speaking, if you have a random product state, then the energy is not exactly in the middle of the spectrum. Let's say if you have a traceless Hamiltonian, then the mean of energy is given by a trace H over the Hilbert space dimension. And if H is traceless, then the mean energy is zero, but for hard random product state, it is the energy deviates from zero, which means that, which just means that it cannot be maximum entangled. This is because if it is maximum entangled, then every reduced density matrix is exactly identity matrix, and you compute the energy, then because your Hamiltonian traceless, then the energy is zero. So for a hard random product state, you expect that the energy is square root of system size and order square root of n, and this gives you a constraint that allows you to prove that it deviates from the maximum entanglement. And for the second part,
but under these energy constraints and so on, but the system still try to reach like maximal entanglement under that like conserved quantities, right? How do you like show that?
Okay, so what I'm saying that if you have a generic hard random product state, the energy is square root of n, and this is a constraint. And what you do is that, in some sense, what you do is that you just compute the maximum possible entropy subject to that constraint.
Uh-huh.
And what you get is this result.
And somehow the system can reach that state?
I cannot prove that the system can reach that state, but that is the maximum entropy that you can reach. Then it says that this is the upper bound. It doesn't mean that it always can reach that state. For instance, if it could be that your system is localized and this result still applies because this is just an upper bound.
Yeah. Okay.
And for the lower bound part, roughly speaking, we using some defacing. That is, this non-degenerate gaps is used to show that effectively it defaces, in the sense that you could consider a so-called diagonal ensemble. That is, you compute the coefficients of with respect to, that is, you expand your initial state in the eigenstates basis and consider the coefficient. This allows you to define the so-called deface state, that is, remove all the off-diagonal elements. And then you study in that representation in the sense that you can prove two results. The first result is that the entangled entropy at most time t is very close to the entropy of the deface state. Is first statement. Mm-hmm. And the second is that the deface state has the volume law of entanglement.
If not, yeah, let's thank Yi-Chen again. Thanks for the great talk.